Blog Talk Radio.
Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, on Monday, August the 20th, a very warm day here in North Texas. It'll be in the mid to upper 90s for the rest of the week, so nothing new here. And as far as the weather is concerned, we seem to be getting the same weather we've had here for as long as we've recorded the weather in Texas, and that probably goes back quite a few centuries. Today we're going to touch base with our friend George Rodriguez in South Texas. We're going to be talking about a couple of issues. One is the campaign between Senator Cruz, the incumbent, and the challenger, Mr. O'Rourke, a campaign that is getting a lot of attention. If at the very least, it's getting a lot of money. And a very interesting article that came out this morning in the Dallas Morning News talking about this campaign and asking the question that I think many of us have been asking for some time is a fellow like Mr. O'Rourke, isn't he a little bit too liberal for a state like Texas? If you look at the issues, he definitely is. We're also going to talk about DACA. DACA is right now in a standstill. The judge that made news a couple of weeks ago by saying that he was going to give the administration until the 23rd of August to restart the program, or at least explain why they terminated the program, apparently has backed out right now and is basically throwing in the towel. So you're beginning to wonder, where does this go next? There's a big decision coming out of Texas, a judge here in Texas, any moment right now. I thought it would happen by now. And that could very well be the last really the last step before it goes to the Supreme Court. If it goes to the Supreme Court, you're looking at probably, at the very least, June of 2020, or June of 2019, that is, before there is a decision. Or it could even be June of 2020, depending when the case gets to the Supreme Court. So nothing soon happening on DACA, as far as I can see. We remember on this day, 1940, Leon Trotsky was killed in Mexico. On this day in 1940, Leon Trotsky, of course, was the great enemy of Stalin, who was, at least according to most people, executed on orders of Stalin on this day in 1940. So I guess we know once again how communists settle their political differences. They kill you if you disagree with them. Let's say hello to our friend George Rodriguez. How are you, George?
Real good. How are you doing, my Ben?
How is the weather in South Texas?
Oh, it's kind of muggy, but we're supposed to get some rain later, and it's supposed to cool off. The past 3 days have been in the triple digits, and we're going to get a break after that. So kind of looking forward to that.
Well, we had a lot of rain here on the weekend, Saturday and Sunday afternoon. Both times the baseball game had to be delayed by rain, something you don't really think of that much in the month of August. You know, we usually don't get enough rain in August. And this year we got a couple of good rainstorms over the weekend. So that's, as they say, that's always good for the grass. I don't think you'll ever see the grass complain about too much rain now, George.
No, definitely not.
Yes. Well, let's talk a little bit about what's happening in the campaign and the Senator Cruz, Representative O'Rourke campaign. Before we do, though, I wanted to touch on DACA. Because, as I mentioned in the introduction, I thought we would have a decision by now from the judge in Texas.
And then
you have the situation of the very last judge basically throwing in the towel, saying, "No, I'm not really going to require for the administration to restart it." If I understand correctly, that's what he said, George.
Yeah, in fact, I'm quoting here from the Washington Times. It says that Judge John D. Bates acknowledged the legal mess, no kidding, the legal mess that has arisen around the program. I think that, you know, rather than making the waters more murky and more muddier than what they already are, I think that he's he says that he's just going to back out of it. He said, according to the article, that he also delayed part of his previous ruling that he would let those stay here under DACA who applied for special protections. So hundreds of DACA recipients, according to this, had exploited the loophole under the Obama administration, but Trump administration has shut it down. And so now, you know, there's no more there. From what I understand, they're not taking any more applicants. And so they're, you know, the thing is just closed. And so that's it just is a question of what are they going to do now?
Well, George, the question I always had, maybe you did too, was how does a judge say restart a program that basically lapsed by itself? I mean, the program expired in September, I think it was, of 2017 or March of this year. I don't remember which one. It expired. And so the Trump administration had no responsibility to do anything because it was an executive order. In fact, the Trump administration literally could have killed the executive order on the first day on the job.
That's exactly right.
Because it was just an executive order. But they basically let this thing drag out. I think my guess is that the Trump administration sincerely wants to see a solution to this in the Congress. I don't see that happening now with the elections around the corner. So at the moment, the only place I see this going, George, depending on who wins or loses here in Texas, the only place I see this going is to the Supreme Court. And there you're talking about June 2019, potentially June 2020, before they get to an opinion, George.
Right, and by then a lot could happen, including having even another conservative on the bench. So, I think from day one, a lot of the liberals and pro-DACA people kind of knew what they were getting into. This was more of a delay tactic to exploit, like the article says, exploit some loopholes. And then suddenly again, not banking that Trump or any other strong Republican would win the presidency, I think that now they are just completely blown away. And so how do they deal with it and how do they approach it? You know, something that really, really shouldn't have happened in the first place. That's the question. And I don't think, I think the answer is very simple. The answer is very simple. You can't, you don't. It's that simple.
Right.
You can't,
well,
and you don't.
And the only place it could have happened, the only place where something like this could have happened is the U.S. Congress. The Congress under Democrats chose not to do anything about it. Under Republicans, it hasn't either. Maybe there's a message there. You know, when people don't try to fix something, maybe there's a message there that maybe nothing is actually broken. Maybe nothing will ever happen with the Dreamers. I don't think they're going to be deported, but at least the Dreamers. But at the same time, this is, and I have to be critical here of the Republicans a little bit. This is a great, Congress has got to deal with issues like this one way or the other.
Exactly.
They've got to put these things up to a vote one way or the other. If you don't want it, great, but put it up for a vote and vote no. But this idea of just letting things linger, I think that's what frustrates a lot of people, George.
Yeah. The whole idea of the Congress was to let the people decide. I mean, that's everything, particularly from the House point of view. It's all about letting the people decide. And unfortunately, because of some things being very messy, if we can use that word, sometimes they avoid having the people decide. Well, I got news for you. You know, that comes with the territory. The Senate is supposed to be representing the states, and the House is supposed to be representing the people. Well, you know, let there be a vote about what the states and what the people want on this issue, as well as various other issues. So
I agree.
It's sad that there's this, and again, it's the fear of the politics and the media, in my opinion.
Well, it's interesting, because I was talking to a dreamer about this a few months ago, and this is right after President Trump made the offer that he was willing to fight for the legalization of 2 million of them, with a the opportunity, of course, they could become citizens at 10 to 12 years, and then on top of that, he would have to get back something from the Democrats. And what I mentioned to the dreamer, we started talking about this, and I said, you realize how unusual it is for a country to do what the United States is considering to do, that is, to legalize people who were brought here illegally, even though they were minors, they were brought here illegally. Do you realize how unusual that is for a country to do something like that? Most countries would not do it. Most countries would sell the dreamers, look, guys, I'm sorry, I understand you were brought here when you were 5 or 6, but, you know, that's not my problem, that's your parents' problem. And I'm not saying that they would deport them, but they certainly would remind them that they're in the country illegally. And I think that, you know, that to me, this is what has always been so complicated about DACA, that you're really asking the Congress to do something that has never been done before. That is legalizing people who are in the country illegally, even though they're young people. I understand many of them. I've met many of them. Many of them are doing quite well. I agree with that. But it's a very unusual thing. And that's why, you know, I always knew that if you bring this to Congress, it was going to take time, because it's a complicated thing to put together, George.
It is. It is. And unfortunately, again, we get back to this whole situation of the fear of the politics of certain things, the theater that could be created with this. And unfortunately, I think that we can lay a lot of that at the feet of Democrat activists, you know, liberal activists that have caused a lot of anxiety by creating, you know, like I said, political theater, you know, having staging sit-ins and walkouts and all this sort of stuff. You know, a lot of politicians don't want to deal with that. They don't want to, you know, they're worried about it, the optics of it. And the only people that's hurt are the very people that you're supposedly trying to help.
That's exactly right, and you're exactly right. The other problem the DACA people have, or the Dreamers have, is that I read this somewhere, that 80% of the Dreamers live in 5 states. But the decision to legalize them is going to be made in 50 states. So if you are a representative, let's say, in San Antonio, and let's say you're a Democrat representative in San Antonio, you know, you have Dreamers living in your district. You are already going to take care of these Dreamers by how you vote. So they don't have to worry about your vote. They've got your vote. But the people that they have never done a good job at cultivating or explaining why they need to vote yes on this, are the people who live in areas where DACA is not an issue, at least they're not knocking on your door or calling you on the phone saying, legalize these young people. And I think that's their problem. They've never really understood how to make their message outside of areas where they've got the votes already. And that's why I think that there's no urgency. If you're a representative from Missouri, a representative from, Kansas, wherever, there's no urgency for you to do this, because you have more to lose than to gain, George.
Right, exactly. I mean, the sentiment, for example, in a place like Nebraska or Idaho or one of these states that doesn't have a high concentration of Dreamers. The sentiment is just not there, and the only thing they want to do is, hey, the only thing they hear and C is someone who's foreign, who is illegally in the United States.
That's right.
Period. And that does not, again, work well for them. That does not work well.
No, it does not at all. It does not work well at all, and that's, I think, the problem. Well, let's go to the Aurora Cruz campaign. Interesting article that was in the Dallas Morning News this morning. Interesting because if you read the headline, you know, this happens a lot, of course. You read the headline, and the headline tells you, kind of leads you to believe that O'Rourke is connecting with GOP voters. But what the article is really about is how difficult it is for him to connect with GOP voters. And the article then goes into analyzing the issues and where O'Rourke stands on some key issues, for example, the impeachment of President Trump, Medicare for all, gun control, very liberal immigration policy. He doesn't want to build a wall. I mean, this is a man who is obviously, as the article itself points out, a lot closer to Bernie Sanders than most Texans are. And the question is, how can this guy win? And that to me is, I think this writer kind of got to the point of it, that is, and the point of it is that sooner or later, we're going to have to start talking about issues, sooner or later. And when Senator Cruz, I think, really starts what I believe will be a very effective bombardment of Senator of Representative O'Rourke, strictly based on issues, painting O'Rourke as the liberal that he is, I think that's when this election begins to take shape. And I say 10 points. Could be worse than that, but I'm going to say 10 points. And that's why I see this, because it's all about issues. Unless, as we were saying off the air, unless Senator Cruz makes a brutally crazy mistake, which I don't see that happening, you know, I don't see what the big deal is about this election, George.
Yeah, it's interesting that you bring that up regarding the article in the Dallas Morning News, because the other one that I read by Rachel Corr, I believe it is, she points out how O'Rourke and Colin Allred, who's running against Pete Sessions, how their platforms are similar, you know, to their policies are similar to what Bernie Sanders, the socialist, of course, has proposed. However, she goes into a third of her article goes into the defining of socialism, and trying to kind of apologize in my book of that these guys are not really socialists. They are, you know, they have socialist policies, but they're not really socialists. You know, I'm not sure how, when Ted Cruz begins to pin them down, pin, you know, O'Rourke down, how that's going to sound. I mean, how that's going to be played. How is he going to respond? He's for universal health care. Well, you know, isn't that Obamacare? Isn't that what, you know, brought this whole grassroots rebellion about? He wants debt-free. He wants debt-free college education for some students. Well, you know, again, that's a freebie, and who's going to pay for that? And then he wants to end a federal ban on marijuana. Well, that's definitely not going to play well with a lot of folks. You know, that's definitely not going to play well with a lot of folks. So, you know, and then, of course, there's his whole immigration position. His whole immigration position is, you know, almost completely the opposite of what most Texans like. So it just, you know, you're right. It's very difficult to think that this guy, once he begins to defend his positions actively and succinctly, how the heck is he going to win?
Well, and also his positions against the NRA. There's a video of him. Yeah, there's a video of him saying he doesn't care what the NRA thinks. I'm sure that's going to go over very well with the people here in Texas. But I just think overall, and we saw something similar with Wendy Davis in 2014. Wendy Davis, at this stage in 2014, I don't remember what the polling data indicated back then, but clearly. What we were hearing about Wendy Davis at this point in 2014 is how much energy there was, and how much money she had, and how, you know, she was the future of Texas politics. On the other hand, Abbott was not as telegenic.
She was walking on water at that point.
Yeah, and I think that eventually, though, as they began to zero in on her issues, and I have to tell you, I think Wendy Davis not been as radical on abortion as she was, she probably would have done better. What killed her was abortion. But, you know, she at one time was a Republican, so she was a lot more centrist on many issues than O'Rourke. I mean, O'Rourke has been a left-of-center Democrat, the kind of Democrat who can only win in certain districts. I don't know what district he represents, but I think it's in El Paso. Isn't he from El Paso, I think?
Yeah, he's from El Paso. That's right. Yeah, he's from El Paso.
So he's always represented a very, you know, I suppose, a heavily Hispanic district. But again, I don't know. See, I've never heard this guy. My problem with O'Rourke is that I know very little about him. My guess is that very few people in Texas know much about him either, George, which is,
well,
for the moment,
yeah,
working to his advantage. That's working to his advantage now. I think at some point that's going to work to his disadvantage, I think.
That's right. That's right. I you know, I mean, he's doing a good job, supposedly. I mean, I've got to qualify that. But he's supposedly doing a very good job of getting out there and talking to small groups. But, again, small groups is one thing. You know, mainstream Texans is another thing. And, again, when you talk to small groups, I'm sure that these are small groups that are selected and specially invited, et cetera, et cetera. When you get out on a stage to debate Ted Cruz, or when you get out in a big rally and, you know, you get criticized, I'm not sure how he's going to handle that. I am not sure how he's going to be able to handle that, let alone defend his positions.
Well, another interesting thing, too, is that I read today that a third of his money has come from outside Texas. I guarantee you a third of his vote is not coming from San Francisco. I mean, all of his vote is coming from Texas. And that's the challenge. That's the same problem that I think Wendy Davis ran into. I mean, she had plenty of money. Money was never a problem for her. But you know, the people who are cheering you on don't live in Texas. So it's kind of hard to win when the people who are sending you money, I guess, they're just sending you money, I guess, because they want to defeat Cruz. But that's, you know, money can only go so far if you cannot vote in Texas, George.
That's right. That's right. It's a situation where you're trying to really put a pretty face on a bad situation.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And I think that they are, you know, I mean, I don't blame them. It's a campaign, you know, it's a campaign. And I don't, you know, fault them for putting the best foot forward in a situation that's obviously an uphill battle. But, you know, at some point you're going to have to be very, very realistic and ask, okay, what the heck? You know, what is this? What the heck is this all about?
Right.
You know, how are you going to do this, and how is it going to affect me personally? And when those hard questions begin to rise, I think that's where he's going to have a very, very difficult time. I think it sounds great when you talk about health for everybody,
sure,
education for everybody, public safety. It sounds great when you talk the platitudes. The devil is in the details.
Right, and when you're not being challenged, he sounds great. And I think that's problem he's going to have, that, you know, when Cruz is going to challenge him, and I think, it, you know, when he does a debate, he's going to be challenged him as well. I mean, when he's reading from a speech or whatever, it all sounds very good. But at some point, as you indicated, he's going to have to explain where he stands. And so far, he really hasn't, or at least he hasn't really explained, as you say, how he's going to pay for this. I think the immigration issue is a killer for him. I really do. I think he's way to the left of where most of the state is. And you have to begin to wonder, you know, what is he really doing in this campaign? My sense is that this is a stepping stone for Beto, that I think he's saying, okay, look, I'll put on a good fight. I'll win a moral victory, as they like to say. That kind of sets me up for future runs. And you never know. You never know down the road. He's telegenic. You never know down the road where he may end up. Heck, they might even give him a show on MSNBC.
That's right. That's right. That's right. I mean, he is, you know, I mean, a lot of folks have said that he favors a young Robert Kennedy. You know, well, that's, you know, that's great and dandy, you know.
But see, I don't even know.
If you can turn that into something, that's great.
Well, I don't even know how many people remember Robert Kennedy anymore. I mean, look, that's the problem with these Kennedy references, is that they're generational. I mean, if you're over 50, yeah, you might have a connection to Bobby Kennedy, but I, you know, the 20, 30, 40 something people, I mean, my goodness, Robert Kennedy was killed 50 years ago. June of of 1968. That's 50 years
really?
Ago.
I mean, amazing.
How much longer? How much longer do you keep this thing going? Now, I can understand a president. That's a little different, you know, because he's the president.
Yeah, right.
But Robert Kennedy, senator, I mean, 50 years ago, I mean, I just don't know. I mean, you have to be a hardcore Democrat to really get into that.
That's exactly right.
That hardcore Democrat is going to vote for any Democrat, whether he looks like Ted Kennedy or Robert Kennedy or whoever. He's going to vote Democrat anyway, so you've already got him. All you're doing is just making him love you more. That's all you're doing there, George.
Well, which is very interesting that you mention that, because I was reading over the weekend of a strategy that the Aurora campaign is trying to do here in South Texas, where you have precincts that have huge numbers of registered Democrats, but very, very low turnout. Apparently, he's targeting these precincts. For example, there are five here in San Antonio they talked about, here in Bexar County, that they talked about, where the campaign identified 85 to 90% Democrat registered Democrats, 85 to 95% of the voters. However, less than 10% of those voters actually turn out to vote.
Mm-hmm.
So what they're trying to do is just encourage those voters in those heavy, heavy Democrat precincts to up their numbers. And they feel that if they can, you know, do that, that'll balance out the Republican voters in other precincts. But that's a very, very interesting strategy. And I was kind of shocked to find out that, you know, you still had counties that had that high, 90%, for crying out loud, registered Democrats. That's amazing to me.
Well, you got to get them out to vote, as you say. You have to get them out to vote. And what I suppose what that's going to mean is they're going to spend a lot of money on the early vote, and they got to get these people out to vote one way or the other, and that's the only chance they have, I suppose. But you know, Ted Cruz is going to do the same thing. So I mean, it's not like, you know, they're the only ones who understand that getting the vote out early is important. Ted Cruz is going to do the same thing. I also think, George, one last point here about O'Rourke. I do think that there's a point in time here where the balloon could very well pop on him. And that's if he begins to waver on some of these liberal positions to appeal to a broader group of people, that could, you know, there could be a certain turning off of the excitement, because people are going to say, oh, he's kind of pulling back. He's not, you know, he's just another politician. He's talking out of both sides of his mouth. And I think very often that's what happens to these people. They just deflate when the campaign gets tough. So that could happen as well. And,
well, interesting.
But we'll see.
Yeah, interesting that you mentioned that, because 2 weeks ago, and very, very little news was made about this, but Congressman Joaquin Castro, the twin of Julian Castro, who is now testing the waters to see if he can run for president. But the congressman went on public radio, and when they tried to pin him down about abolishing ICE and about absolute amnesty and a few other things, universal health care, he backpedaled. He actually backpedaled.
Mm-hmm.
So I think you're very right. I think you're right. I think, in some cases they're eventually going to have to, if they're serious about winning and about running, they're going to have to back off some of the extreme positions.
Oh, unless they're not.
Yeah.
Unless this is a stepping stone and then he goes down with a liberal. He goes down, you know, as the big liberal in flames, and that could also happen as well. Well, George, as always, thank you for your time. And we'll try to get together again when we finally have a ruling on DACA. I thought that we would by now, so but I guess not.
Be.
So let's keep an eye on that ruling. If you hear anything, let me know, and we'll see where that goes. But that I'm surprised it's taking this long, George.
Me too. But again, You know, we're asking Congress to do it, and I guess we're in the same boat as President Trump, who has asked Congress to act, and they haven't. So
that's right. That's exactly right. Well, George, have a great day. Have a wonderful day, and we'll talk. Hopefully, speak very soon.
You got it. Take care, my man. Bye bye.
Thank you so much, our friend George Rodriguez down in San Antonio, Texas. We always touch base with him to talk a little Hispanic politics. We're going to take a little break. I want you to hear from my friend Carlos, and we'll be right back.
This is Carlos Guerrero Harpiz. I would like to see you guys this Saturday night at Tzatziki's at the Star, located at 6765 Winning Drive in Frisco. I'll be performing instrumental high-energy music at 6:30 until 9:30 p.m. Make your reservation today at 972-377-2276. Remember, Tzatziki's at the Star is the place to hang out on Saturday night. For upcoming dates, look for me on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.
And we have a link to the information right under the show description. If you see there where it says check Carlos' website or schedule, you'll be able to click on that, and it'll take you to his schedule. I hope you have a chance to see him. He's a wonderful musician, a great friend of our show, and just an absolutely wonderful evening if you go out to any of the places where he's playing. Well, that's going to wrap it up, folks. Thanks again to our friend George Rodriguez down in South Texas. And I'm still surprised that there is no decision on DACA. The judge had asked everybody to get their paperwork in by Monday. That would have been the 13th. And here we are Monday the 20th, and there's no decision. I guess it could happen this afternoon. But my goodness, I'm a little surprised that it's taken this long. Have a wonderful day, everybody. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas.